Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5, 51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd, 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome inside the Playbook for a Thursday. I'm John Rook. Eric Scalavino from PFW normally joined us in the opening hour, but the locker room time frame was a little bit different today for the guys following practice, so he's currently in the locker room gathering some quotes and such for PFW. So Eric's going to join us a little bit later on in the program. But Armando Salguero from the Miami Herald, who covers the Miami Dolphins, he's going to join us here in just a little bit. And also in hour number two of the program, Russell Baxter from ESPN, NFL Research Coordinator, he will join us as he normally does on Thursdays to run through the entire week of the National Football League season. What we were talking about a little bit and what, you know, Andy and Paul and I and what we talked about a lot during yesterday's show, in case you were kind of wondering what the conversation was, perhaps you missed yesterday, was, you know, yesterday I'd open up the argument or open up with the particular conversation and then making the argument that if the Patriots don't win this year, or at least don't get into a championship game scenario, that kind of opens up the door for another team, most likely the Steelers, but I also offered up the opportunity for the Colts as well to take away the quote-unquote team of the decade designation from the Patriots. Now, we all know this is all, it's all conjecture, all right? There is no official designation as team of the decade. That kind of thing doesn't exist. It's really fans' perception and or media perception more than anything else. Paul actually made a very good point, which, you know, actually I had not considered, but that, you know, in the 1990s, the Denver Broncos won back-to-back with Elway. There was a lot of sentiment for Elway at the time. And yet they're not even considered close to being the team of the decade of the 90s. That the Cowboys, having won 3 Super Bowl championships in the early part of that decade, are generally considered to be the team of the 90s, even though there are probably a couple of other contenders. Largely, I agree with that, okay? All I'm doing here is creating argument. I'm just bringing up the subject. I haven't told you specifically what my feelings are on the subject, although I did allude to that several times during the show yesterday. But see, sometimes some people, Andy Hart, don't listen to what's said. And so they just want to open up their mouth and nothing but hot air comes out. I certainly believe the Patriots are considered and should be considered the team of the decade. However, if they don't win this year, or at least put themselves in a title game scenario, then I think it opens the door depending upon if somebody else wins. Now, let's say if Minnesota with Brett Favre wins this year. It's still a slam dunk. The Patriots have the decade. But if Pittsburgh wins, Pittsburgh is going to have as many championships as the Patriots. And they will have won them later in the decade. And I think because they've won 3 in a 4-year span later in the decade, I think that they are going to steal a lot of the limelight. Maybe not all of it, but a lot of it. I also entered the Colts into the equation if the Colts win the Super Bowl this year. Granted, they'll only have 2 titles. But the regular season dominance cannot be overlooked. You may choose to disagree with that, and that's perfectly fine. Perfectly fine. My point is, though, is that Colts fans could make a case, and undoubtedly will be making a case for that quote-unquote unofficial title if they go on and win. So you can be prepared for that. And many of you who listened to the show yesterday, and some offered some emails thereafter, several of you also offering your emails, listening to the show later as a podcast, and that's fine because that's what we do. I wanted to go back to just a couple of them here before we move on to the Dolphins because that was yesterday's conversation. And again, I brought up the subject merely to create conversation, just to create it. For instance, Thomas here says, John, love the show and your ability to stay on topic, unlike PFW, but you couldn't be more wrong about any debate concerning the team of the decade. I'll admit I'm a homer, but the facts are indisputable. Patriots from 2000 to current, regular season wins for the decade, 118 and counting, NFL record. Postseason wins for the decade, 14 and counting, that's an NFL record. And then he goes on to playoff comparisons, and where, you know, each team has one loss. Pats win with more than double the game appearances. Super Bowl appearances, the Colts have one, Pittsburgh has two, New England has four. Yes, New England has the one loss, but still has twice the games, so goes to the Pats. He's basically pointing out the Patriots, again, the numbers still stack up. Thomas, I totally agree with that. The numbers definitely stack up in the favorite in the favor of the Patriots. All I'm saying is that should they not win, and one, if not, well, either one of those teams goes on to win, then I think it creates another entire argument altogether. Your opinions, by the way, are still welcome. If you want to continue the subject, and you can violently disagree, just don't throw things, right? Webradio@patriots.com is how you reach us here in the program. All right, we're going to open up today largely by dealing with the Miami Dolphins. And, of course, for the Patriots last year here in Foxborough, it was a little tough dealing with the Dolphins. And Armando Salguero, who covers the Dolphins for the Miami Herald, joins us here inside the playbook. Armando, thank you for taking the time today. We always appreciate visiting with you. How goes the battle?
It goes great. Those are pretty interesting stats. What's the point? Who's the best? Team of the decade is?
I basically had allowed yesterday, and the reason I brought up the conversation, I'll tell you exactly what it is, and I'd love your take on it, all right? I saw a number that was actually generated by NFL PR, that if the Colts win this weekend, they will have won 17 straight games. And I said, wow, regular season games. And I said, wow, that's pretty close to what the Patriots have done earlier this decade. And sure enough, yeah, the Patriots obviously have a 21-game win streak, and they have an 18-game win streak from earlier in the decade, which the Colts could ironically match if they beat the Patriots in 2 weeks. And so that got me thinking, well, if that continues to go, and or let's say the Steelers win this year, can you make an argument for one of those two teams perhaps taking away this quote-unquote unofficial team of the decade moniker that's been attached to New England?
Wow. That's pretty interesting.
What do you think?
Well, look, the Patriots clearly, if you want to break it down into a decade format, sure, the Patriots, they've won more Super Bowls than anybody else. And you know what? I don't get caught up in regular season victories too much because I think everybody in New England saw that regular season victories are great, but the victory that really, you know, makes a difference one way or the other and really does temper how you feel about a season is the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's no one in the greater New England area that wouldn't have traded one loss in 2007 during the regular season for one victory in February of 2008. So that, to me, is the more important issue. Having said that, the Patriots obviously have won more Super Bowls than anyone in the decade. I think the Steelers have to be in the conversation as a team of a decade. And, you know, the Colts also, but not nearly as much as those first two that I mentioned.
And that's exactly how I feel about it. But, you know, some don't choose to listen to the actual words that are coming out of my mouth. You know what I'm saying? You see, this is very slanted toward the Patriots. It is Patriots radio, I understand that, but I try to enter a little bit of, you know, shall we say, middle-of-the-road conversation, and of course, you know what happens when you sit on the fence, right? You get hammered.
Yeah.
You get hammered from both sides.
From both sides, and, you know, it becomes kind of uncomfortable after a while, really.
Yeah, I know. That's what I get for trying to stimulate conversation here. Hey, I'm a big boy. I can take it. So I have to admit, right off the bat, I love one of your latest blog entries talking about how the evil empire looms for the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah.
I love that. That's great. I never really thought of it as the evil empire, but is that how you think the Dolphins and Dolphins look at New England?
Yes.
Okay.
I think not just Dolphins and Dolphins. I mean, after a while, when you're on top for so long, people start to have a grand dislike for, you know, the front runner, the team that is on top. And then you add to that the issue that the Patriots had, you know, what was it now, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
with the Spygate.
Yeah.
That added to the reputation.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it hasn't been that long that people have forgotten how to hate the New England Patriots, and I think that is league wide, not just in Miami.
Well, you know,
but a lot of it comes. I must say, a lot of it comes from envy, and so if you want to be somewhere, You want to be the guy that's envious or the guy who is envied? You want to be the guy who's envied.
No question. No question. I totally agree with that. And frankly, I can understand why fans outside of New England would feel that way, because if I were outside of New England, I'd probably feel that way if I'm passionate about my team. Fact remains, though, is that, you know, the guys in the locker room down the hallway here at Gillette, they remember very, very well what Miami came in here and did last year. So, you know, I'm certain that, you know, they're not taking the Dolphins lightly this weekend.
Nor should they. I mean, the Dolphins this year are a more physical and improved team, even though their record doesn't, you know, suggest that right off the bat. The mm-hmm. Dolphins have flaws. There is no question about that. They don't have any perimeter, players to speak of, especially on offense. But are they, you know, one of those teams that sort of takes your breath away coming off the airplane? Yeah, they're a big, tough, physical team. And the Jets found that out, in fact, found it out twice.
Yeah.
And, New Orleans, who was undefeated, found that out. And even though they were able to overcome, you know, the Dolphins being more physical by simply being, you know, a team that's able to score with the big plays. And I think that's the same matchup that we've got going on this weekend. You've got a team in the Patriots that have great, you know, big play ability against a team in the Dolphins that are going to grind it out and try to, you know, beat you down. And I guess we'll see what happens at the end of Sunday.
And yet I would also think that, and I'll add to the equation here, that Dolphins have a little bit of big playability based on what Ted Ginn did last week.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because Ted Ginn, he has flashed that. He's shown that a couple of times in his career. I think what we all recognize is if you're going to flash it, at some point are you going to be consistent with it? And up to this point, that hasn't happened. The Dolphins are obviously hoping, praying, expecting that happens. We'll see. It hasn't happened yet in 3 years.
Do you ever see him as an option at receiver? I mean, I realize that everybody knocks, you know, his ability to catch, or rather his lack of ability apparently to catch a football. Can he stay right where he is and be a valuable contributor and a, shall we say, a monetary contributor in terms of the salary that he makes if he's just a kick returner?
Sure, if he's an outstanding kick returner. My frustration with Ted Ginn is twofold, and one of them has nothing to do with Ted Ginn. My frustration is that here's a guy that in college returned 8 kicks for touchdowns. 6 of those kicks were punts, 2 of them were kickoffs. We saw what he did last week on kickoffs, and yet the Dolphins don't have him returning punts. You know, before last week, he had 1 return in the pros for a touchdown. That was a punt. And yet they don't have him returning punts. I don't understand why not. I don't get it. Obviously, this coaching staff has decided that Devon Best, who's never a reliable guy, even though Devon Best last week had a fumble. So that frustrates me because you see a great potential, and you saw it last week against the Jets where he goes 100 yards and 101 yards. And he's done it better in college mm-hmm. and returning punts.
Mm-hmm.
The other frustration with Ginn is he's fast, but he's long stride fast. He's not what I would say is agile, or he doesn't make people miss, in short space. And so that hurts him as far as his receiving ability is concerned. He doesn't have a doctorate, so it took him a while to learn the offense. Those are the things that you know, have maybe set him back and have prevented him from becoming a really good player for the Dolphins.
That's pretty good. By the way, the whole Devon Best issue, sometimes, and you probably know this as well as anybody, sometimes coaches are really reluctant to say, oops, we screwed up there.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is probably why Ted Ginn is doing what he's doing right now.
That is true, and I grant you that. But, I mean, this organization under, you know, Bill Parcells has been less reluctant than most. They make the mistakes just like everybody else, but they are quick to correct those mistakes. for their sake, I would hope, and maybe it's not a mistake. I mean, they obviously know what they're doing, but I would hope that they see the truth and they don't try to gloss it over with mere facts.
Armando Salguero, who covers the Dolphins for the Miami Herald, with us here in the playbook. Now, since Bill Belichick became coach of this team in 2000, he is 10-8 against the Miami Dolphins. Since 2001, the Patriots are 40-12 against AFC East opponents, but half of those losses have come to Miami. Why do you think Miami matches up particularly well with New England?
Well, you know, obviously, once upon a time, the Dolphins put a pretty, you know, solid defense on the field, and again, they're doing that of late. There was a time between 2000 and, I would say, 5 and 2008 where that wasn't the case, but even then, they held their own. It's good when you can put a Jason Taylor, a Sam Madison, a Patrick Surtain, a Zach Thomas, a Junior Seau, 4 years, you know, younger than what he is now, on the field against Tom Brady and company. And so that's why they were able to have a degree of success that maybe other teams in the division didn't have.
And, of course, you know the old adage, if you can't beat them, steal their players. And the Patriots have two good former Dolphins in Welker and Seau.
Yeah, I mean, the year that the Patriots, there was 1 year the Patriots went to the Super Bowl. I don't remember if it was the last year or the one before that. I looked at their roster, and there must have been six Dolphins on that team. Mm-hmm. Wes Welker, Heath Evans was on that team.
Yep.
Junior Seau was on that team. You know, Sammy Morris was on that team.
Another one, yeah.
And there was a couple more that don't come to mind right now off the top of my head. But obviously those are guys that the Dolphins have either discarded or traded away in the case of Welker, that it didn't work out so good for the Dolphins.
No, but at the same time, though, I just found it kind of interesting that the Patriots found in Miami some players that they really felt like could help this organization out and went out and targeted those players and brought them in. So I think that's the ultimate compliment I think you can almost pay nowadays in the NFL.
Yeah, clearly. But like I said, if you're the Dolphins and you see that, you've got to be pulling your hair out. Getting beat by the guys that, you know, or watching a team go to the Super Bowl in part because of guys that you had on your roster.
Sure, sure.
That's not a good day for you.
How has the second coming of Jason Taylor gone, in your estimation?
Outstanding. Better than advertised, better than expected. You know, originally when Jason Taylor signed here, they were hoping that he would be a pass rush specialist at age 35, that they would save him, that they would, you know, have him healthy after he wasn't healthy last year in Washington. And so that was the plan, except that on the way to that grand and masterful plan, last year's strong side starting outside linebacker, Matt Roth, went on the non-football injury list for 6 weeks. Jason Taylor took over the starting job, and he's not about to give it back because he's playing pretty darn well against, you know, run, and he leads the team in sacks. So it's been a godsend for the Dolphins.
Let's flip it to the other side. How has the Chad Henne era begun in your estimation?
He's 3-1.
That's a pretty good start.
He's 3-1, and ultimately, I think Bill Parcells, you know, he grades quarterbacks on a couple of things, but the main thing is, did you win at the end of the day? Going to be in 2 or 3 years? Absolutely not. Does he still make mistakes? Does he still hold on to the ball a little bit too long? Is he still not completely certain about what he's doing, either pre-snap or during the play? Yes, but having said all of that, for a first-year starter in the NFL, it's good enough.
Right. You know, I have to admit that I look at the Miami roster, I see some talented players on this team. I'm thinking that, you know, part of the difference maybe between these two teams, at least just from looking at the rosters almost side by side and knowing of some of the players, is New England might have an initial playmaker or two, might have a little bit more depth, but it appears that Miami is beginning to mold itself very much in the fashion that the Patriots originally molded themselves years ago when Parcells was running this ship.
I would submit to you that if you trade three players on the New England roster and put them on the Dolphins roster, the Dolphins are a Super Bowl team. And those three players are Tom Brady, Wes Welker, and Randy Moss. And I would say to you that if those three players are on the Dolphins are better than the Patriots as they are now.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, you know, you don't get an all-timer like Tom Brady, an all-timer like Randy Moss, and then a pretty darn great player like Wes Welker every day. You know, it's easy to say, well, just give us your best three guys and we'll be pretty good. But those three guys are the main difference between these two teams, I think.
Armando, am I oversimplifying things by saying that the key to this game could easily be how well Miami runs against a Patriots defense or against, I guess, basically how well the Patriots pass against the Miami defense?
That's it. You know, obviously the Dolphins, they're top five running the football. The Patriots give up 4.5 yards per carry rushing defense. So the Dolphins, what are they going to do? They're going to try to run the ball and keep Tom Brady on the sideline so he doesn't, you know, shred them. On the other hand, Tom Brady, you know, when he gets on the field, you know, it's going to be one of those situations where what kind of damage can the Dolphins limit? If Randy Moss and Wes Welker are having a good day, if Tom Brady is having a good day, the Dolphins are going to be having a really bad day.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, you know, if Ronnie Brown and Ricky Williams are on the field most of the game, then, you know, the Patriots are going to have their hands full.
The other X factor in all of this, obviously, is the fact that the Dolphins sort of unveiled the Wildcat against the Patriots here a year ago and obviously had great success to the point now where it seems like almost every team, except New England, has some sort of a Wildcat package in their playbook. And, in fact, a lot of colleges now have that. So I guess the Dolphins have been trendsetters, number one. But now I would ask, what can Miami do to maybe surprise New England again when it comes to breaking out the Wildcat?
Well, that's the interesting thing about the Wildcat package. You know, they've got some tweaks here and there, but at the end of the day, the Wildcat package is a bunch of downhill running plays. It's not about the gimmick. It's not about the surprise factor anymore. Every team knows that the Dolphins do it. Every team practice for it. Some teams get to practice for 2 weeks, like the Patriots just did.
Mm-hmm.
But no matter how much you practice against it, no matter how prepared you are, when the guy that lines up in front of you is, you know, pancaking you, you've got no choice but to give up yards. And that is basically the Dolphins' philosophy with Wildcat. It's a downhill run offense. They're going to run at you. They're going to be tough. They're going to be, you know, stubborn about it, and they're going to, you know, figure we're going to see who's more physical at the end of the day. That is what Wildcat is, bottom line.
All right. I guess the other bottom line would be then, do you feel like Miami, should they lose this weekend, can still make the playoffs?
No.
So
I don't think so.
So this is a must-win scenario, in your opinion, then, for Miami?
Yeah. I don't see how the Dolphins... You know, the Dolphins have lost 4 games.
Right.
I don't think that 2 teams are going to come out of the AFC East. And I don't see how the Dolphins turn a 3-5 start into, you know, a 10-6 type of record. That's asking a lot when you consider that they still have to play the Patriots again. They still have to play Pittsburgh. They still have to play Houston, who is now suddenly a pretty decent team.
Mm-hmm.
And has beaten the Dolphins each of the last 3 years. It's a tough assignment. You know, it could happen, but I don't see it.
Armando, good stuff today. Thanks for spending some time with us here, and safe travels up to New England.
Thank you. My pleasure.
All right, you got it. Armando Salguero, who covers the Miami Dolphins for the Miami Herald. You can get his stuff on MiamiHerald.com. He's actually a very honest beat writer. Normally beat writers tend to sort of kind of toe the company line because that's all they're fed. But I like the fact that, you know, especially now in this day and age where beat writers can kind of get away from just the actual newspaper print, they can actually get into giving some of their opinions based on the facts as they see them when they do things like blog and they do, you know, podcasting and things like that. And Armando has a very good blog on the Miami Herald, and he's very forthright in his opinions, based again on fact. About the Dolphins. In fact, I didn't ask him because I knew what the answer would be. He picks the Patriots to win the game on Sunday. He does. He says the Patriots win this game. He likes New England's roster, looking at it side by side, and that's why I asked him the side by side question. Although I did find it interesting that he did say, hey, you give us Brady and Welker and Moss in Miami as a Super Bowl team, as it presently consists. I don't know that I'd necessarily disagree with that, but I think I can make an argument for putting Brady, Moss, and Welker on probably a half a dozen other contenders, and that automatically makes them Super Bowl teams. So Miami's not alone, I don't think, in that instance.
If you put Brady, Welker, and Moss on Texas, are they winning the Super Bowl?
Thanks, Brian. No, not quite. but they might make the playoffs. How's that? Gosh. Is my orange blood showing today? I don't know. What's up with that? I know. That's going to make... See, now, that you're just going to make strippers mad. You're just going to make him mad. He's going to have to send me something now about Oklahoma. So, but that's just the way it works, all right? So, all right. Thanks to Armando. Again, Russell Baxter comes up in about a half an hour from now as well. Webradio@patriots.com is how you reach us. Your thoughts on what he had to say about the Dolphins, I'd love to get your take, your reaction on it. And also, normally on Thursdays we ask for your predictions on the game. Now, the PFW guys earlier all think the Patriots are going to win in a walkover. 34-13, I heard. I think I heard 34-20. I'm thinking 34-20 is probably about right, somewhere in that vicinity. That's kind of what I'm thinking here. But I do believe that this will probably be a one-possession game until late, when the Patriots probably tack on one more and open it up. In other words, I'm saying probably about 27-20 in the fourth quarter. And Miami will probably have an opportunity, be within one possession of the game, to tie the game. So even though the Patriots may score late or may take the ball away on a turnover or what have you, to open up a little distance, the score will probably not be indicative of the way the game is played. Let's also remember that Miami knows that the Patriots are preparing for the Wildcat and whatever else they want to throw into the mix. So Miami is going to come back at probably a wrinkle of some sort that the Patriots have not seen before. Take that to the bank. They're going to come in with a wrinkle the Patriots have not seen before. They have nothing to lose. You just heard Armando say this team doesn't make the playoffs unless they win this game this Sunday. He's probably right. Schedule's too tough the rest of the way. 10-6 is probably not, once again, not going to be good enough to get into the playoffs. And Patriots know that better than anybody. They were 11-5 and didn't make the playoffs last year. It's going to take 11-5 minimum, I think, to get in. 10-6, I don't think it's going to get it done. This is a must win for the Dolphins. You should always respect and even fear a little bit teams that have their backs to the wall, and that would be Miami coming in. It's important for the Patriots as well. We all know that because of the gauntlet they're getting ready to run schedule-wise here in the month of November. See, now we're getting into good stuff. We're halfway in the season, baby, and now we're talking about games that mean something. That's what I like. What about you? What are your thoughts? What are your predictions on the game on Sunday? Your thoughts on Armando and his take on the Dolphins as they match up with the Patriots? Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number. We're going to take a timeout. When we come back, we're going to listen to what Tom Brady has to say about the Miami Dolphins coming up in the playbook.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So, basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto-reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines, back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got razor-sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
Right, so, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday, to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Goodness. So is this like the pop version of the song they stole from the Houston Oilers?
T-Pain.
Who is it?
T-Pain.
T-Pain. Never heard of him. Shows you where I am. I assume it's somebody that's popular. Relatively speaking, yes. Yikes. Let's play that on the PA system on Sunday. That'll get a rise out of the crowd. You want to get this crowd juiced and pumped and ready, to bite the heads off of somebody? Play that song on the PA system on Sunday before the game. You know, our fans have been accused, at least from time to time, since Gillette Stadium was built, of being complacent because they're spoiled in their new digs, even though these digs now are, 8 years old. I still think they are. I think we've lost a little bit of that edge that we had in the cozy confines of Foxborough Stadium when everybody sat on concrete bleachers and steel bleachers in the freezing rain. We're all spoiled now because we have individual seats and they're not metal. And we have cup holders. And we can go into the club if we reside on the second deck and we can warm up. Bull! Mule muffins! This is football! Let's go! Play that song. We got to play that. You got to play that song. Tell Jace, we got to play that song. That'll get him going. Should play that song. Good opportunity to play that song would be when they come out on the field. Because everybody, all the opponents, they only want to be introduced as a team. Everybody wants to be introduced as a team. That's something that they copied from the Patriots back in 2001. The Super Bowl there when the Patriots were introduced as a team. People have jumped on that one like there's no tomorrow. And so everybody does that. So when we introduce the Dolphins as a team on Sunday, play that. That'd be so cool. Of course, I'd probably have to close the windows in the booth because people would be throwing things. That'd be awesome. That'd be a way to get the fans going. I totally believe that. That'd be a way to get them going. All right, so the Pats coming off of the bye week, getting ready to face Miami. You know, a couple of the numbers that I mentioned to Armando just a short while ago, bear repeating here. 40-12 are the Patriots in the regular season against the AFC East since the beginning of 2001. That's the best intra-division record of any team in the NFL over the last eight seasons. And Miami, of course, started this year 0-3. They are 3-1 since, and all three of their wins have been in this division as well, two of them against the Jets. The other one, of course, against the Buffalo Bills. And, of course, the Pats and the Dolphins will also do it again the first part of December. When's the game? December 6th, yeah, at Miami. So still two games to play with the Miami Dolphins. I would happen to agree with the premise that this is a make-or-break, must-win situation for Miami. Not so much so for the Patriots, but if the Patriots lose, certainly mathematically they got plenty of time to right the ship. But the Patriots would be 1-1 in the division. Miami would be 4-4, only one game back of New England in the standings overall. But they would be in pretty much, well, almost insurmountable 4-0 within the division. Wow. So, I mean, unless they drop both of their other divisional games, you know, Miami's only one game out of the league, but they have a huge lead when it comes to a divisional tiebreaker. So now, maybe that underscores a little bit how big a game this really is for Miami. It's huge. It's everything. It's their season. They lose this game. They drop to, let's see, the Patriots would be 6-2. They would drop to 3-5, so they'd be three games back. And they'd be three games back with eight to play. Not mathematically impossible, but certainly a heck of a lot more hill to climb than it would be if they win. It's pretty big. Pretty big. John in Dallas writes, I saw some clips on Ted Ginn in college. One clip against Michigan, I think, had Ginn lining up with a Wildcat. Could this be the new wrinkle we see this weekend? You mean with Ginn at quarterback or taking the direct snap? Maybe. Give him a chance to run downhill, maybe. I still like the fact that I think that, you know, Pat White should begin the run of the Wildcat. Because, you know, whether or not you think he can, you know, throw accurately enough or not is certainly open to some conjecture. But fact is, he's a threat to throw because he was a quarterback in college and a pretty doggone good college quarterback. That's the wrinkle that I'm waiting to see.
Can Ted Ginn catch the shotgun snap, though?
That could be a question. Well, he obviously caught the kickoffs last week twice, didn't he? So, I mean, it's not like the guy has no hands. Maybe he can catch the ones that are end over end and just can't catch the spirals. I don't know. Yeah, the wrinkle's coming. It probably would involve Ginn and or Pat White. I think those would have to be the two potential targets that the Patriots have to look out for. Have to look out for. All right. We mentioned that Tom Brady had an opportunity to visit with media members, talking about his evolvement, his becoming within the offense this season, his becoming more and more comfortable as the days, the weeks, the games pass by, and also on facing the Miami Dolphins. And here is Tom Brady.
You said earlier this week that you are feeling better than you've ever felt. Why do you think that is?
But I think I'm doing better.
Yeah.
Well, I think, like I said, I don't think I've been hit a whole lot this year. You know, it's just been one of those years where I haven't had any sacks or, I'm understanding how to take care of my body and get the treatment I need. So it's been a good year thus far.
Does that include how many throws you make? You keep track of better understanding of that.
Yeah. I think that's part of it, and if you're going to throw the ball a lot, and like we do, you got to throw a lot in off season. I've probably threw more in off season than have in past years, so I think that's been important too.
Tom, what can you tell from the last two games? Ton of yards, ton of points. So, you're good in the secondary, not your best opponent. What have you learned about yourself?
Well, you know what I think. What we've seen all year is when we execute well. We produce points, we move the ball, we get first downs. When we don't execute well, and we don't move the ball, we don't convert on third down, we don't get the ball in the red area. So, You know, if you're a quarterback and you drive back and you have guys open and you overthrow them by 5 yards, you know, you're not going to score points. So I think that's understanding plays that we've had where we haven't, done what we're coached to do. You know, that's just not the way you can play football. And in times where we go out and execute well, like I think what we did against Tennessee, what we did against Tampa, we scored points. So I think it's just much more concerted effort and practice and concentration to get those things done. I never heard of a whole lot of criticism. I think I've been very lucky over the years, to play on a great team. We won a lot of games, so. That's criticism, then I welcome that. It's been pretty good for me over the years.
Can you talk about the second part of the season and what you expect from this team offensively going into this more or less crunch time in terms of that?
Yeah, we had a good week off. I think we did a lot of stuff to do our self-scout and evaluate where we're at and the things we need to do to improve and get better. And, I think for the most part, guys are in the spots where they're going to be. I think we have a pretty good understanding how we're going to attack people. I think everyone's excited for what's ahead. We've got some great opponents, a lot of division games. This one's a huge game for us. We haven't played Miami. They beat us here last year in our worst defeat we've ever had here at Gillette Stadium. So it's going to be important for us to come out and play our best game.
What do you see?
This defense is your defense. Obviously, practice against your
just in that it's a 3-4 and they play a little 4-3. It's a very different defensive coordinator. Pasqualoni's been there for a couple of years. Coach alluded to it this morning, it's a very Bill Parcells type of team that he's built as general manager. They're all big, they're all physical, they're all tough. They're very stout in short yardage situations, good in the red area. We weren't very good in the red area against them last year. We were 4-8. So, they have their strengths, and I think we've got to understand ways that we need to try to attack them and ways that we need to try to go out and execute well so we can hopefully produce points.
They've always been a tough opponent for you. It's just a matter of personnel, guys like Taylor.
Yeah.
Basically that easy.
Yeah. They've had a great defensive front seven for as long as I remember. It's still the same. It was Taylor, Porter, Trace Armstrong, Bowens, Gardner over the years, and Vonnie Holiday, and now they've got a younger group that's just as active, put a lot of pressure on the quarterback. And then, obviously, Jason Taylor, he's still one of the forces in the league. He leads their team in sacks this year. And so he's playing really well, and, we got to account for him, certainly, because he returned a fumble return for a touchdown last week. An explosive player for him. He really gets him going. So you don't want too many situations where, he's celebrating in the end zone or anything like that. It's not going to be good for our team.
You spoke on the evolution of the offense last week about how you tried different personnel. You look at the 2007, moving receivers around, and you just didn't have the personnel to fit that. Is that one of the best things about this team over the years, is the ability to adapt and not be sort of stubborn about certain things? Hey, this is what we do best. We're going to go do it.
Yeah, we've always tried to do that. And I think it does no good to beat yourself up, over and over and say, we're just not good at this, we're not good at this. I mean, you're obviously trying to make improvements on things you're not good at, but at the same time, if you're asking certain players to do certain things they're not best at, then that's kind of defeats what you're trying to do as an offense. You're trying to get your players in the best position possible so that they can go out and make plays. And, over the years we have done that, and I think I've always enjoyed the later part of the season because, your team is what it is at that point, and you've really seen what the other defenses can do, whereas, the first couple games of the season, you're trying some new things out, they're trying new things out, but at this point, what we've seen on Miami's defense, that's what it is. I mean, that's the way they play, so they, like I said, they do some things very well, and you got to understand the things they do well and try to keep them from doing those things.
Does it help at all the fact that you've already played the Jets this year, and you see Miami, what they did against the Jets this past Sunday. Does that help in preparation, seeing it against a team that you've already played?
Not really. I mean, every week is very different. Like, you see we beat Tennessee pretty bad a couple weeks ago, and then they beat Jacksonville pretty bad last week. So each week is different. Each week has, you know, its own set of, you know, plays in the game that change it. So, you know, they played two tough games against the Jets, and they came out victorious in both and came down to the red area. Jets didn't score last week in a red area. Miami scored in a red area in the, you know, three games before that. So that's what it comes down to, just a handful of plays and who makes the play. And, you know, that's decides the winner a lot of the times.
Tom, I know you weren't playing last year when all that went on, but just to emphasize how important division games are, has anybody brought the tiebreaker from last year up, how you guys were 11-5 and kind of got caught because, you know, your records weren't good enough in certain situations?
Yeah. I mean, to win a division, you got to play good in the division. You're not going to win the division and be, you know, 3-3 every year. You got to go out there, and we're 0-1 right now, or 1-1. You know, and like I said, we have four key division games coming up. You know, this one is, you know, right on the top of the list. So you got to play well in these games. And it's teams that usually know you the best. They're the ones that, you know, they have a lot of confidence that they can beat us at home. I mean, they beat us, like I said, you know, they beat us last year, the worst defeat we've ever had. So, you know, it's going to come down to who makes those plays, where the execution is at, and whether we complete the ball or we don't complete the ball. And whether they can rush the passer or they can't rush the passer, I mean, that's ultimately what it comes down to.
Tom, I'm a little bit of a developed a healthy relationship with Jason Davis for the years that you played against him. Is there one story that stands out in your mind, or can you just talk a little bit about some of the going back and forth against him so many times?
Well, you know, he's been kind of what that team's, and they've been a defensive-oriented team over the years. They've always played well on defense. It was Zach Thomas and Jason Taylor for a long time. And then when he left the division last year, I thought that'd be the end of it. But then he came right back this year. So that's not very comforting to have him back there. And, you know, we've had a friendship over the years when you play someone as many times as we played him. You know, he's a force. And he's like any team's best player. You know, you can't go in there and think that he's not going to make the plays. He always rises to those occasions. He's a great player, so I'm sure we're expecting his best game this week.
Did you try to get him? Did you try to get him?
A time in the huddle where maybe, you know, late in the game you said something that sort of led to, you know, a win or a positive situation. Something that got on, you know, a message delivered, a story you have, you know, some late game situation. Kind of look back and something on that.
Well, you know, naturally, everyone shuts up when I walk into the huddle, man. That's just the way it is. It's natural for the quarterback. You know, when you walk in, you got something to say, and it's usually very important. So, you know, I'm always the one talking out there, and other guys obviously have input. But, you know, when I say something, that's what I mean. That's what we're going to do. So, they probably tune me out most of the time, you know, knowing most of those guys. And, you know, I try to encourage everybody and get everybody on the same page. And, you know, when it's not going well, you try to find ways to encourage guys. And when it's going good, you try to keep them focused. And, you know, probably no specific examples, but that's just. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, we're down 11. I mean, there's not much you can say about it. And, you know, this is what we have to do. And it, you know, ended up coming true. That's what happened. And I think the reality is we went out there and we executed. So, I mean, I could say whatever I want to say. If we go out there and suck for, you know, the last half of those, you know, the last half of that game, then that's what it's going to be. But, you know, went out and played better. I don't think it's what I said. You know, I think it's just us going out and doing it.
Tom, football question. You guys go to the empty backfield. You do that quite a bit. As a quarterback, what do you like about that? And what do you feel has allowed the team to be successful doing that?
You know, anytime you empty the backfield, it means you're, you know, they pretty much know what protection you're going to be in. You got five blockers, and so if they bring a sixth guy, you got to throw it quick. If they bring five guys, you got to sort the five that are coming. So it's always a protection issue when you're in an empty formation. But if you can pick it up, you know, you can really sort out the coverage pretty easily because they all have to spread out and basically cover up their guy. So it's nice for a quarterback to be able to see the defense, to see them separate, and then you're able to pick your best matchup. So if you can find your matchup, you know, before the ball snaps and you can protect it, then it's usually a pretty good play.
Tom Brady with the Patriots Medium talking about his progression and talking about getting ready for the Miami Dolphins. Of course, Brady, 8, now make that 9-5 as a career quarterback starting against Miami in 14 previous starts. He's 34-8 in his career as a starter in regular season division games. 5 of the 8 losses, however, have come to the Miami Dolphins. Again, we bring this point out just to show you that Miami, more so than really any other opponent in the division, throwing in the Jets and Buffalo, has been more of a thorn in the Patriots' side perhaps than even sometimes you realize or I realize. And yes, Miami did come in here last year without Tom Brady, admittedly, and spanked the Patriots pretty good. With the Wildcat and everything else in tow. And then I think there's a lot of intrigue. A lot of fans are looking forward to kind of waiting to see what kind of wrinkles will Miami throw into the equation for the Patriots defense to look at this week. And, you know, the Miami offensive coordinator is Dan Henning. Obviously, he has a long history of play calling, most of it at a very high level within the NFL, former college coach at BC and other places as well. Obviously, Henning is well known by the Patriots coaches and coaches throughout and has a high respect factor for him and his creativity and his playmaking ability or play calling ability. And so I think that'll certainly be something to watch. Let's see the wrinkles. You'll probably notice them when you see the Dolphins line up at some point, especially when they line up in the Wildcat for the first time and run it, and the fans will probably be going nuts here. But will it be a direct snap to Ronnie Brown? Will it be a direct snap to Ricky Williams? Who, by the way, between Brown and Williams and the Wildcat notwithstanding, to me, that's the best 1-2 punch going in the NFL. Two backs of that caliber with a healthy Ronnie Brown and a seemingly with his, you know, stuff together, Ricky Williams. I don't know. That's a pretty tough 1-2 running tandem to comprehend, much less have to defend. So that's certainly a large reason why I think the Dolphins have had some of the successes on offense that they've had, and because they've been able to take some of the burden off of Chad Henne. I mean, he is, as Armando Salguero told us a while ago, he's 3-1 as a starter, which is pretty good, but he's also had backs like that to hand off to take a lot of the pressure off of him. When Miami has managed to make mistakes, they have made mistakes defensively. I'm not so sure that Miami is as good defensively as, you know, Jason Taylor and Ojori Porter would like you to think they are. I mean, there's what? 2-3 rookies that get playing time in the defensive backfield. This is where the Patriots and Tom Brady will have to try to take advantage on Sunday. Question is, will they have the football long enough to take advantage? That's the game plan. Dolphins have to keep the ball out of the Patriots' hands, which means the Patriots' run defense, which has been pretty good, even though the average yards per carry the Pats have given up is really not very good. It's over 4, almost right at around 4.5 yards per carry that they've averaged. So they've bent. They haven't broken necessarily. But the Patriots are going to have to get stops. They flat out are going to have to get stops in the rushing game. You know, you can give up a first down or two, I think, to a guy like Brown or Williams, but you're going to have to get a stop in the rushing game, and you're going to have to get the football because, you know, Brady and company, the Patriots offense, have to have it. Now, that being said, the ideal situation, I think, at least theoretically here, would be to get the football and go with it if you can win the opening coin flip. But, you know, traditionally the Patriots, if they win the flip, they defer to the start of the second half. I'd want to get the jump on Miami. I'd want to drive the ball and put them behind right from the get-go, because I don't think Miami is as good a come-from-behind offense as they might be playing with the lead, and I think their record would probably bear that out. If you hurry Miami up, I think you have a better chance to win, and I think that will certainly play a difference in the ballgame. All right, we'll pause here for a break. Russell Baxter from ESPN, NFL Research Coordinator, back inside the playbook, coming up.
Okay, so to recap, these are last year's sales results, and here's how we stand now. I need some clutch players who can get us some numbers up on the board. Ted.
Yes, sir.
In the fourth quarter.
Fourth quarter.
We've come from behind in the fourth quarter before. Ted,
what?
I need you here in the shotgun. Put on this helmet.
It's a garbage can.
Do it.
But it's dark in here.
Susan!
Yes?
What? You're going to reverse right and then break left at the cubicle.
What?
I am.
Let's go!
Mr. Krevelin?
That was awkward.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
What?
You can take the trash can off now.
What?
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A. Bank of America N.A. member PIC. Copyright 2009 Bank of America Corporation.
Hello?
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday, to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop. Dine. Enjoy.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in? It
says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hour number two inside Patriots Playbook for a Thursday. It is week 8 for the Patriots, week 9 around the National Football League. We're at the halfway point, the veritable halfway point in the season. And joining us to take a look at that and this week's games,
Baxter.
Russell Baxter, NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN. Good to visit with you again, Russell.
Hello, John. How you been?
Great, great. How goes the battle?
We're at the halfway point. Hard to believe, isn't it?
You know, it does kind of go by quickly. But I was just saying a little while ago that, frankly, though, these games now are really starting to, if they didn't mean something before, now they really mean something. And case in point, Armando Salguero, who covers the Dolphins for the Miami Herald, I had him on the program a little while ago, and he said, yeah, there's no way the Dolphins make the playoffs if they don't win this game, so therefore it is a must-win. And, you know, I couldn't disagree. And I think based on the record, it'd be pretty hard to disagree with that statement, which means this game is going to mean something.
There's no doubt about it. And when you consider that the real reason that we're talking about the Dolphins still being in the division race, besides the fact that it's, you know, fairly early in the season, is the fact that all their wins this season are against the division. They're 0-4 outside the division or 3-0 inside the division with a win over the Bills and a sweep of the Jets.
Right.
So that, now, am I saying that the Dolphins are going to win the division at 6-10? No, I don't think that'll be happening. But that is the thing that is keeping their season afloat after the miserable start they got off to.
No question. We have had a debate here over the last 24 hours or so. It was a piece that actually it started only because of a number that I got from the NFL public relations staff this week, noticing that if the Colts win this weekend, it would give them 17 consecutive regular season wins, which means they will be approaching the Patriots' record of 21 in a row, but certainly within reach. 18 in a row the Patriots had a little earlier this decade, and yes, they could tie that record with a win against those very same New England Patriots next week. And so because I saw that number, which I know you're very familiar with, I entered into the equation, well, let's say if the Patriots don't win the Super Bowl or don't even, let's say, reach a championship game scenario, you could certainly make a case if the Steelers win the Super Bowl, You could make a case the Steelers could be considered the team of the decade. I also said that I think you have to at least include the Colts in the conversation if they go on and win the Super Bowl this year. What do you think about those statements?
Well, I think you got all the right suspects for this grand mystery that we will try to figure out at the end of the season, because we love to do stuff like that. And everybody's got good causes here. I mean, no team has won more regular season games in the 2000s, this decade, than the Colts. They have 108 wins. The Patriots have 107. The Steelers have 99. Those are the top three teams. The Steelers, of course, have won their two Super Bowls in the last 4 years. The Patriots, of course, have won three and have been to four. The Colts have a Super Bowl win and have been to the playoffs 7 years in a row. To me, my feeling on this is, regardless of what Pittsburgh does this year, and regardless what Indianapolis does, the New England Patriots are the team of the decade. And everybody else makes a good cause, but I look at it this way. It'll be no more than three Super Bowl appearances for the Steelers, and if they win, it would be three Super Bowl wins. Even though the Patriots lost the Super Bowl in 07 to the Giants, they still got there. Okay, so four Super Bowl appearances in the decade, their amount of wins, and let me just do this right off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
In 2001, the Patriots beat who to get to the Super Bowl?
Rams. Oh, to get to the Super Bowl?
To the Super Bowl.
Steelers.
And in 2003, they beat who to get to the Super Bowl?
Steelers.
Colts.
Oh, Colts, and then Steelers again.
And then Steelers again.
Yes, yes, yes.
So the Patriots, with all due respect, even if they don't get to the Super Bowl this year, to me, are the team of the decade. I mean, you don't have to win it all the time and so on, but I think they, to me, have already achieved something very, very special here.
Even if the Steelers win the Super Bowl this year?
Yeah, well, even if the Steelers win the Super Bowl this year, because they'll have only tied the Patriots in terms of wins, and they still have one less appearance, and they would have lost to the Patriots twice in the AFC Championship game.
Yep, yep.
And if you actually look at Tom Brady's record versus the Steelers in this decade, I think he's only lost to them once, which was the end of the 21-game overall losing streak.
Mm-hmm.
The Steelers beat the Pats last year, of course, and that was with Matt Cassel. So, I mean, if you have these three entities that are so close together, I think you have to look at the tiebreaker almost head-to-head. I mean, it's all a fun debate and so on, but to me, the New England Patriots have made their mark this decade.
Good. All right, fair enough. That's why we brought it up.
And let me throw out one other thing.
Yeah.
Remember, when the Dallas Cowboys, we regard them as the team of the 90s, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they won the Super Bowl in 92, 93, and 95. They didn't win the Super Bowl after that. They haven't won a Super Bowl since.
Right.
Yet we still regard them as the team of the 90s.
That is true. And we brought that point up about an hour or so ago by saying, Denver won a couple of titles in the 90s with Elway, yet
yes,
they're nowhere even in the conversation for the 90s.
Right, exactly. So to me, I think you have to look at the overall body of work. You have to look at the overall record. You have to look at championship appearances. I mean, listen, you could just as easily make a semi-case. People don't jump down my throat here, that the Buffalo Bills are the second best team of the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah,
even
no.
They didn't win it.
Yeah,
they
that's right.
Super Bowl 4 years in a row.
That's right. Absolutely. You certainly could make that case. And had they won one or probably two, I think they would have at least be right up there with an argument with the Cowboys.
Yeah, and that's what people, that's the one thing that I've talked about with a lot of different people and so on. Isn't it amazing what one Super Bowl win will do for a franchise? I mean, you just mentioned the Denver Broncos winning those back-to-back Super Bowls in the late 90s. Anybody remember the Denver Broncos' record in the Super Bowl overall?
It's poor.
It's 2-4.
Yeah, I thought so.
You know, they were the team that couldn't win a big one.
That's right.
Until they finally won back-to-back.
And now Buffalo is the team that can't win the big one.
Correct. And Minnesota, of course.
And Minnesota, too. That's true. Everybody forgets. And, of course, that may become more and more apparent as we progress this season just because of the year that Minnesota has had.
Right.
And we'll tackle that in a moment.
So if you'll let me be the unofficial tiebreaker in terms of the debate, I declare...
You'll say Patriots?
I'll declare the Patriots are the team of the decade, regardless of what happens the rest of the year.
Well, you know what? That'll make Patriots fans very happy to hear a numbers man like you make that statement.
Well, donations are accepted.
Exactly. I think that's a great idea. Within the division this week, the Buffalo and the Jets are off. And of course, the Patriots have the Dolphins, so there's your AFC East. But I think that there will be some attention paid, and should be some attention paid by Patriots fans, to the game in Indianapolis, because the Houston Texans will be playing at the Colts. Of course, the Patriots will play the Colts the following week, but they have the Texans on the schedule on down the line, and the Texans have traditionally played the Colts pretty tough.
Yeah, but always found a way to come up short, unfortunately,
yes,
for them.
Yes.
But let's look at here and talk about the model of consistency. And no wonder you have the Colts in the conversation. The Colts are 7-0, John. They're 7-0 for the fourth time in 5 years.
Pretty good.
That's pretty good. Now, remember last year at this time, they were 3-4.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't lost a regular season game since. As you mentioned, the 16 in a regular season games in a row. Houston, of course, is also 5-3.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, whoop-de-doo for a lot of teams probably saying that. It's the best start in their brief history.
They're also 3-1 away from home.
Right,
I want to
and
point
they've
out.
Also won 3 games in a row.
Yep.
So this is a team, remember, this is a team, you go back to the end of last year, 10-4 in their last 14 games. So they have played a lot better. They got off to a troubling defensive start beginning of the year, couldn't stop the run. Last 5 games held 5 teams under 100 yards rushing. But I have to throw out one historic number here when it comes to Peyton Manning and the Houston Texans that I almost had to look at twice, but I've had it in my notes forever, and it just keeps getting better.
Okay.
Peyton Manning has faced the Houston Texans 14 times.
Mm-hmm.
He is 13-1.
Mm-hmm.
In those 14 games, he has thrown 33 touchdown passes and 5 interceptions.
Wow.
Roughly, or as I like to say, roughly, an afternoon by Mark Sanchez.
Oh.
And that's not a cheap shot at Mark,
ba-doom.
But I say that because, think about it, a couple weeks ago we saw Mark Sanchez throw 5 interceptions in 1 game. Peyton Manning has faced the Texans 14 times and thrown 5 interceptions. So just give you some amazing context to the disparity of his numbers there.
No doubt. That being said, do you give the Texans any shot?
Yeah, I do. I do because, now I will say this, the loss of Owen Daniels, their very good Pro Bowl tight end from a year ago,
mm-hmm.
is a big blow for them because he helped stretch the field as much as anyone. And Matt Schaub has already thrown more touchdown passes than he did last year. He's staying healthy. Andre Johnson is a load for anyone. They can run the football. I don't know if they can stop Indy. That's the problem. I mean, that's been the biggest problem for them. Listen, they had him on the ropes last year. Before Sage Rosenfels flipped and flopped and imploded right before our eyes. That game, of course, was in Houston. In some ways, I think it almost benefits the Texans to play them in Indianapolis because I think a lot of pressure will be off of them. But that being said, unless the Colts are looking ahead to New England, and who says they can't be, I gotta lean toward the Colts to make it 8-0.
Sure, I would think so. I would think.
But I think this is a very game Houston team. I wouldn't be surprised if they pulled it off.
I think most Patriots fans would probably want the Colts to go ahead and win, not only for the notoriety that would come, you know, for the game next week, but frankly, they might have a little bit more of an edge to them if they've been beaten once already.
Well, no doubt, because as we see in this league, it's not what you do when you win. It's how you handle when you lose.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, ask the New York Giants how
right.
it's going right now.
Yeah, no kidding. Not very well. Yeah, the championship-caliber teams find a way to bounce back and bounce back quickly. I'm liking this matchup on Sunday. Ravens at the Bengals. I didn't really think this would be much, certainly before the season started, but gosh almighty, I'm impressed with what Cincinnati has done to kind of hang in there. Although, what's even more impressive about the Bengals is they've gotten 3 of their 5 wins on the road, and this one is at home against the Ravens, who I thought were impressive last week.
If the Bengals are going to win the AFC North, it's the next 2 weeks that will tell us everything. They host the Ravens, and they go to Pittsburgh next week, and they've already beaten both of those clubs. Remember, they're 3-0 in the division this year, including 2 road division wins at Cleveland and at Baltimore. The Ravens kind of got themselves straightened out a little last week when playing Denver. It's something they needed desperately. There was another team. You know, they got off to a 3-0 start and suddenly had lost 3 games in a row. Cincinnati has a lot of balance. I'm wondering when the loss of Antoine Odom on their pass rush is going to finally catch up with them. By the way, they have 17 sacks this year, which doesn't sound like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But considering he had 17 sacks all of last season, that would be a lot. But the thing that's been impressive with the Bengals and having Carson Palmer back is just their balance. Cedric Benson, on his way to being comeback player of the year, after his hot finish last year and the way he's played this year, he ripped through the Bears the last time we saw them.
Sure, why not?
He just gives them a lot of – he gives them the kind of balance that they had when Rudy Johnson was healthy, wealthy, and wise back when the Bengals were winning the division in 2005. That being said, Baltimore needs this game very, very badly. It's a mindset game. Carson Palmer has always had the Ravens' number. I don't think people realize that. Since Carson Palmer got there, he has really played well against the Baltimore Ravens. He had the last-minute drive the last time they played. And I think people are keep waiting for the Bengals to implode. Listen, they've lost two games this year. They lost to Denver and Houston. Nothing to be ashamed of. I somehow think they're going to be a factor in this until the end, and that means beating the Ravens for a second time this season.
That would be impressive indeed, and I think it certainly would stamp some legitimacy to the Bengals overall if they haven't already done that. Another game that I think that would certainly bear watching here is the chance for a little history to be made in New Orleans as the Saints try to go 8-0 for the first time in franchise history, and they'll take on a Carolina team that undoubtedly is going to do everything they can to hold on to the football and run it and run it and run it some more to keep the ball out of Drew Brees' hands.
Well, hanging on to the football is the key here because there's so much has been talked about the New Orleans offense. I'm going to throw out the New Orleans defense here. And okay, maybe if Peyton Manning number is not my favorite, this is my favorite this week. First off, the Saints have forced two or more turnovers in every game they've played this year. John, they have 21 takeaways in their seven games. They had 22 all of last season.
Wow.
And the thing that's even more impressive is the fact that they have taken back six of those takeaways for touchdowns, five interception returns, and a fumble return. Last year, no touchdowns on defensive returns.
Phew.
Okay, they got three punt returns from Reggie Bush for touchdowns.
Yeah, yeah.
So they've gone from 21 and six touchdowns in seven games after going 22 and no touchdowns all of last season.
Well, then
aggressiveness of Greg Williams' defense is paying off.
They're making plays, absolutely. That's what it sounds like.
That being said, I'd like Carolina to win this week.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Why?
Because I think you can run the ball on the Saints. And as long as that running game, if you've seen it the last couple weeks, even though there was a stinky loss to Buffalo in there, just keep this in mind. First four games of the year, Panthers averaging 97.3 yards per game on the ground. Last three games, 217.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, getting the running game cranked up. And that's one way to get the running cranked up is keeps the balls out of Jake Delhomme's hands, who we have seen last week. I think it was the first game all year he didn't play without turning over the football. And he's been struggling. And one way to get his confidence back is take the football away from him. I know that sounds bizarre, but sometimes it works that way.
Yeah, and we should also throw in there that Julius Peppers defensively for Carolina seems to have been rejuvenated over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it's all hands on deck for them. If they're going to make any kind of run at the playoffs, they have to start stringing wins together here. And like I said, it's a short emotional week after beating Atlanta. I just think it's a mad. Listen, here's what people don't realize. Carolina's beaten the Saints 10 of the last 13 times they played them.
Mm-hmm.
And they have beaten them, and I got to preface this. The last seven times the Saints have hosted the game, and I say that because six of the games were in the Superdome, one of the games was at Tiger Stadium in Baton Rouge because of Katrina. So the Saints have not beaten the Panthers in New Orleans since, 2001.
Ooh. Wow. So it's been a while. Definitely
yeah, seven straight road wins by the Panthers in this series.
Wow. All right. That'll be certainly one to watch. An interconference matchup, Chargers playing at the Giants. Giants, it was almost inexplicable what I saw last week against Philadelphia. I'm not sure I have any words to describe it other than that it was just awful. And the Chargers, obviously, you can't count them, as dead yet in the AFC West. You just can't.
Well, no, not at all. I mean, and especially when they go out and beat, the Chiefs and the Raiders, and I don't say that to be mockingly, but I say it because those are the games they have to win. They have to win these divisional games. They're already behind the eight ball after losing to Denver at home, which means they have to play the Broncos in Denver yet. And that could be the game that, ultimately cost them the division, just on tiebreakers alone if they can get hot. And, of course, Denver's got, and we'll talk about it, I'm sure, they got their own tough order this week as well.
Right.
So it doesn't take long to get crawled back in, but you got to win the games you're supposed to win. That being said, San Diego's defense still, to me, has a lot of issues, as has the Giants' defense as of late as well. There are issues in the secondary. There are injuries. Kenny Phillips not being there has really, really cost them, giving up a lot of big plays, running plays last week to the Eagles, and of course the long pass to DeSean Jackson as well. You know, this is a Giant team that was looked like they were coasting at 5-0, now 5-3, and the pass rush, 4 sacks in the last 3 games. And, you know, just to put that in perspective, John, as you well know, how many times did they sack Tom Brady in the Super Bowl? 5.
Yeah.
Okay, the big reason they won that game. Well, when you're getting to the quarterback 4 times in 3 games, especially the likes of quarterbacks like Donovan McNabb and Drew Brees, you're not going to win a lot of football. And Kurt Warner, by the way. You're not going to win a lot of football.
Yeah, you're not having a whole lot of success. That's absolutely right. This one, I think, in the NFC certainly is going to have some impact. Cowboys at the Eagles. I know in Philadelphia, even though the Phillies have been in the World Series, you know, they're still looking at this as quote-unquote Dallas week in Philadelphia, which says everything it needs to say about how the Eagles view playing the Dallas Cowboys. And the Cowboys also seem to have injected a little life in their, not only their entire season fortunes, but certainly in their offense over the last couple of weeks.
You know, I look at the Andy Reid regime, you know, which is the 11th year he's been coaching the Eagles, and I really honestly can say I can't remember the last time the Eagles were this stacked at the skill positions. They got a very good tight end in Brent Celek. They have two very good young wide receivers in Jeremy Maclin and DeSean Jackson. You know, Brian Westbrook did not play last week, and they scored 40 points. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that should tell you something about their explosiveness. And let me go back to DeSean Jackson, maybe my third favorite number. Man has scored 6 touchdowns in 7 games this year. He scored them 3 different ways, punt, return, receiving, and rushing.
That's pretty cool.
his average per touchdown, 66.3 yards per touchdown play this year.
Wow.
The only other person I can think of with that kind of big play potential is Forrest Gump.
You've been working on that one, haven't you?
That one's almost too easy.
I like it, though. I like it. I believe he scored every time he touched the football.
Run, Forrest. Run, DeSean, run.
No kidding. That's funny. Well, then let's get to the Monday night game, because that's the ESPN Monday night game, game that you'll be spending quite a bit of time with this week. And it certainly stands to be a really good one. It will be one that the Patriots fans should definitely be paying attention to, because it features two of the best teams in the AFC, not named New England. Pittsburgh playing at Denver, and I guess we'll find out what Denver's made of. They got their first little bump in the road last week.
Yeah, they did. And now they come home, and you know, they play a Steelers team that's coming off a bye. Steelers team a little banged up on defense. But their defense has been one of the reasons they've turned things around. 16 sacks and 8 takeaways in the last 4 games, all wins. You know, they weren't making those big plays early in the season with Troy Polamalu out. And Polamalu hasn't been around for, like, all 4 of the games, but you can see that they're gaining a little confidence back in their defense. The win over Minnesota, where they let Minnesota go down the field, but they made the strip and the sack for the fumble return from Woodley. Kieran Fox with the interception return. They made plays when they had to, very reminiscent of being outgained in the Super Bowl and yet returning an interception 100 yards.
Mm-hmm.
So that ability to make big plays on defense is what makes them good. The one matchup I'm going to be looking at this game, and Patriot fans will remember, and sure Josh McDaniels remembers last year, James Harrison having his way with Matt Light in the rain up in Foxborough this year. Well, now James Harrison will go up against Ryan Clady, a very solid left tackle for the Broncos. And I did a little number search here. James Harrison, in the last 22 games, which, in other words, 15 games he played in last year in the regular season, 7 games this year,
mm-hmm.
has 24 sacks and 11 forced fumbles.
Wow.
In those 22 games.
Wow.
And out of nowhere, remember, James Harrison, I don't think he had a sack the first 2 weeks. He's suddenly in the top 5 in the league. He has 8 sacks already this year. So they're coming in bunches for James Harrison.
Wow. Definitely want to mark where he is on the field.
Yeah, and I'll also say this about Denver. Their defense is outstanding. But the thing that hurt them last week against Baltimore, I thought, certainly was the inability to stretch the field. You know, Kyle Orton did not attempt, in fact, he threw a lot of screens last week, a lot of passes behind the line of scrimmage. He's going to have to do a better job trying to force the ball downfield, of course, if he gets the time. But listen, Josh McDaniels, in his years in New England, very familiar with the way the Steelers play defense.
Sure.
So there's not going to be a lot of mystery here.
Do you like the Steelers in this one?
I think I do. I think they're gaining momentum at the right time. And as much as we just talked about Cincinnati, I think Pittsburgh's push in the next couple weeks for the division title, I think, is what's important to them. They've got Denver this week, come home and hit Cincinnati. They've already lost to Cincinnati this year, so a sweep at the hands of the Bengals would be costly in terms of tiebreakers. But then again, I think I do like the Steelers this week, and then we'll take it from there. So,
all right, let's go from there then to our matchup here in Foxborough, the 1 o'clock Eastern time kickoff here at Gillette with the Dolphins and the Patriots facing off for the first time this year. Miami's coming off of a 30-25 win over the Jets and sweeping the Jets. All three of Miami's wins within the division. Patriots obviously have had 2 weeks now to prepare for the Dolphins since winning in London. Patriots obviously also have had 2 weeks now to prepare for whatever wrinkles that the Dolphins might throw into the Wildcat formation.
Yeah, and Miami is running this offense very efficiently. But they also proved last week that even when it bogs down, they can find other ways to score. Keep in mind that Ted Ginn had 2 100-yard touchdown returns last week, first time that's ever happened. Their offense had 104 yards of total offense. You know, the Dolphins have been a very bizarre team to gauge this year, John, as you well know. You think about, you go back to week two when they controlled the ball for 45 minutes against Peyton Manning and lost. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You think about last week when their offense gained 104 yards of total offense and they won. You think about the week before when they blew a 21-point lead at home to the New Orleans Saints. So there's been a lot. Stats are hard to gauge with the Miami Dolphins this year. You know, they haven't been as good hanging on to the football as they were a year ago. I will say that Chad Henne has done an excellent job in his first year as a starter, replacing Chad Pennington. But it's still a team that lacks consistency. And the one thing we see with New England, and listen, a lot of people questioned New England when they were 3-2, you know, citing the teams they played. And then there's a lot of people who said, well, the Patriots are now back because of beating, you know, the winless Titans, then winless Titans, and then the winless Bucks.
Sure.
To me, they're somewhere in between, okay? You can't have it both ways. You can't knock them because they play tough teams and then, you know, give them the Super Bowl trophy because they beat two winless teams.
Right.
I still think that they're evolving as a team as well. And my whole thing with New England this year is how the defense evolves, not the offense. I've always felt the offense would be fine, and it's starting to come into gear. They should be able to throw the football with success against the Dolphins. I'm not sure who exactly is going to be covering Randy Moss. And as we saw last year, especially in the game in Miami, Wes Welker killed the Dolphins when they threw underneath. So unless they get to Tom Brady, and I will say this, old friend Jason Taylor is back, and he has had his success getting to Tom Brady. You know, last year it was Joey Porter who had the big game against Matt Cassel. And, you know, I don't know if that's necessarily going to be the case again. It's hard not to like New England. They're playing at home. They've had 2 weeks to prepare, regardless of who they're playing. And I think at least this week the Patriots hold serve.
All right, good stuff. Russell, as always, great to visit with you. Thank you for spending time with us here. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk at you next week.
My pleasure, John. Have a good weekend.
Awesome. Thank you. Russell Baxter, again, NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN, ESPN.com. Monday Night Football, everything that is the NFL around ESPN. I've said it before, I'll say it again, he's the one person amongst the thousands that are employed in Bristol, Connecticut, whose job it is to cover the National Football League 365 days a year. That's his job. He gets paid to do that. Okay, who among us wouldn't want to have that job, huh? Very few of us. All right, let's get another timeout in here. Webradio at patriots.com is how you reach the program. Everybody seems to think, I guess, this is just going to be a walkover because no one wants to offer up any score predictions at all. Nobody has a thought on the outcome of the game. Absolutely nobody thinks that the Patriots stand a chance of losing this game on Sunday. When you consider that the Dolphins won at, what, 38 to, what, 18 last year? Oh, yeah, but that was last year. We have Tom Brady back, and, oh, yeah, and the Patriots have had 2 weeks to prepare for the Wildcats, so the Dolphins aren't going to do what they did last year to the Patriots. There's no way. I would suggest to you that there certainly is a way, because as we've already said a couple of times this afternoon, the Dolphins are playing with their backs to the wall, and you can never underestimate a team that has no tomorrow, and they really don't. They really don't have a tomorrow.
They need to win this game. Their own beat writer for the Miami Herald early on the program told us they're not going anywhere unless they win this game on Sunday. Now, does that mean anything ultimately? Nah, who knows? Do you like the Patriots? Yeah, I understand that. Do I like the Patriots? Sure, I like the Patriots in this game. But what we say and what can actually transpire on the field is they're two entirely different things. You have to play the games. Even in the NFL, even in a year where it seems like there are more good teams and more bad teams and less teams in the middle, you have to play the game. That's the big thing. You have to make certain that everything and every scenario is played out, and you have to cover every angle, and rest assured, you know, the guys in the locker room down the hallway, they're doing just that. They're doing just that. Dagmar is on the phone from Miami. Dagmar, welcome to the playbook.
Hey, how's it going, John?
What's happening, pal?
Good, good. I was just telling your man that I haven't called for a while because I could actually listen to the show and actually write because I was working, but right now my schedule is that I'm at school while I'm listening to the show.
Oh, great.
And yeah, so I just scrambled for 5 minutes out of the studio to be able to call you. And,
nice.
Yeah, give you my my thoughts basically on what are, because since you are asking us, if we have any thoughts of what could be the chance for the Patriots to lose the game.
Right.
I think Dolphins, they don't have what we may call a bad defense, but what I'm afraid of is that we, at some point, we may not be able to rely on the passing game and this, for some reason, or out of the box. Brady is not clicking with the guys from the beginning, then what are we going to do with the running game?
Right.
That's my main concern. The team actually right now does not show a good picture in what it is, the running game. I'm not a big Maroney fan. I still think we can still give him a chance. Out of all the running backs that are right now available for this next game, the one that I like the most on this because he's versatility is Kevin Falk. I mean,
yep.
He always comes up and he's reliable. You can use it on the passing game, not much in the blocking game, but he knows his assignment and he executes better than any other in the backfield that we have. But he's not that strong pounding guy that we may.
I think we just there you are. Okay.
Give some balance to the game because let me tell you, the defensive line on this Dolphins team, it's not small. I mean, these guys are huge. And you have playmakers like Jason Taylor.
Yep.
You have Joey Porter. You have Shannon Crowder. I mean, the guys are, you know, they've been for a while in the league, and you can basically say this is some sort of like a high experience but well experienced defensive front.
Right.
And that's where I think the battle for the running game is. That's where the running game battle is, basically takes place.
Let me ask you something, Dagmar. Do you feel like, you know, that the Dolphins, if they're able to run the football consistently and keep the ball out of the Patriots' hands, can they win this game?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I always tell you that since I live here in Miami, all my friends are Dolphins fans, and I'm always, like, even then, you know, this week they're being, okay, we kind of like, no, we're going to lose this game. I'm like, hey, don't be so sure. Because I'm still in doubt with my Patriots running game. That's my main concern. And if there is something that I'm afraid of, it's not that Wildcat. I mean, the that formation or whatever, because they have, of course, they may have probably done their homework, but it's the ability that the Dolphins have to keep the ball on the ground with two, for me, that's the best pair or couple of running backs right now in the league. Even though the numbers may do not show, you know, what I'm saying, I think Ricky Williams and Ronnie Brown, they are the best. If I have to pick, okay, which pair of running backs from the same team would you take right now, I don't think that many people will go away from what I'm saying. I mean, you got to go Ricky Williams, Ronnie Brown at some point. You got to mention them.
I like them both.
So that's my point there.
Well, I appreciate that. No, that's good input, good insight. You know, I think you're right about the running game. The key to whether or not the Dolphins can hang in there is their ability to pound away at the Patriots and see if they can keep the ball in the Patriots' hands. There's no question. Now,
I'm sorry if I interrupt you. We saw what happened with the Colts.
Yeah.
I mean, no one can actually imagine or think the time, ball possession time on that game between the Dolphins and the Colts, there's no way that anybody can actually upset that they lost that game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, you have a Peyton Manning. I mean, there are guys like Peyton Manning, there are guys like Tom Brady in the league that make things happen. And in that point, I think we have some sort of advantage because we still got Tom Brady, but it's just how much are we going to rely on the passing game? How ready is that defensive line from the Dolphins and defensive backfield from the Dolphins ready for this game? And how much are we going to rely on the running game? Because if we have to rely on our running game, John, I don't think we are in a good position right there.
Well, at least for this game, I'm not so sure we have to, because I think they'll definitely try to exploit some of the inexperience in the Dolphins' secondary and see if they can't let's see who's covering Randy Moss on Sunday. And let's see if we can't go that direction.
Let's see what happens. Anyways, I'm gonna hang up and I'm gonna continue listening to the show. I'll be working on my projects here in the studio. So. Nice to talk to you again, and go Patriots.
Thanks, Dagmar. Appreciate the call, bud. 508-543-7482. That's the number. You can get right in on the program. Webradio@patriots.com. It's how you reach us via email. Your thoughts on the game. Predict the score. Let's talk about it. We'll continue to do that right after this in the playbook.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So, basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto-reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
So, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
The Patriots are celebrating their 50th anniversary, and you can too at the Patriots Pro Shop. The Patriots Pro Shop is the place to find all the official 50th season merchandise. Everything from the 1963 jerseys the players are wearing this season to polos, sweatshirts, and hats featuring the original Pat Patriot logo. The Patriots Pro Shop has the widest selection of Patriots merchandise, including many 50th season items that you won't find anywhere else. Located next to Gillette Stadium at Patriot Place, the Patriots Patriots Pro Shop is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. or 24 hours a day at PatriotsProShop.com. And if you order from PatriotsProShop.com, we'll ship your order for just $5. You'll know it's authentic when you order from PatriotsProShop.com because your item is being shipped from Gillette Stadium. Celebrate 50 years of Patriots football at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
Welcome back inside the playbook here on Patriots.com Radio. Special treat. Jason mentioned, he kind of alluded to something earlier this week, you know, that we're working on a couple of things, but we have a couple of surprises. So here's a surprise for you, Patriots fans. With us on the line here is NFL Hall of Famer, Patriots Hall of Famer, John Hanna. John, how are you?
Great to visit with you. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Wonderful. It's great to hear from you. You were seen lurking in the hallways here earlier this week. Anything going on big?
Well, no, nothing big. It's just a... You know, for the home games, I come up and do a few things for Mr. Kraft and the Kraft family. So this is the week, and I'm excited by it because it's always a big game when you play in Miami, you know.
I was just about to say, I know that you had your share of battles and probably look forward to playing against Miami and maybe as much as playing against anybody else when you played. What is it about Miami week? Does it go back to I mean, how far do you think it goes back? What is it about playing the Dolphins that makes it special?
Oh, I think it goes back a long way. I think it goes back to when Bonacani and Billy Neighbors were traded down there. And, they, you know, I think it goes back to, you know, the fact that there were so many years that, you know, we never even beat Miami. And then we finally broke that jinx and beat them up here. And then it took several more years to finally go down there and beat them in Miami. So yeah. It's just a lot of history there that the two teams have. And you know, there's been a lot of wars fought. I think the snow game for them is always remembrance. When you go to Miami anytime, sure. You tell them you play with the Patriots. So, were you in that snow game? So, I mean, there's just a lot of things that go on.
And I think that there's a certain amount of self-satisfaction from Patriots fans everywhere in knowing that they had to go through Miami to get to their first Super Bowl back in 85.
Oh, absolutely. You know, that was the game that basically broke the jinx.
Right.
You know, that was the only time that... you know, either in my career that I ever beat them in Miami.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think the Dolphins, why were they so difficult to beat? Were they really that much better than everybody else?
No, it was because our owners liked to go down there during the winter. It was mad. I really think that did have a contribution to it, but really because, you know, if you think about it, you know, we've been playing in, you know, below freezing temperatures.
Sure.
And, you know, when you go down to Miami and it's 85, 90 degrees and you play, I mean, it takes its toll. And, you know, it by the end of the game, you know, we're just, you know, you're just fighting to stay out on the field. I mean, I don't know if you remember, I remember that great game on Monday night when even the San Diego went down there and Kellen Winslow, he'd come out of 70 degree weather and he still couldn't take it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can imagine what it would be like for a northern team to go down there in the winter.
No doubt. Is there much to be said at all about that kind of a difference nowadays, or because the schedule's so long and because it's been talked about so much, is weather really, in terms of going from hot to cold or cold to hot, whatever, is that really an overrated part of the game?
Well, no, I think it depends on the team. I mean, one of the things that, you know, I've noticed is there's a lot more teams with bubbles now.
Mm.
You know, when you're indoors and you're in that heated area, I don't think it has as much effect when you go into a warmer climate. I think there, you know, that it's probably not as big a deal as it used to be, but I think it still affects you to some degree.
Yeah, gotcha. Now, obviously, you have your observations on this year's Patriots team as well, and I certainly would be curious to know how you feel how this team is beginning to at least appear to get a little bit closer to what we left in 2007 before Brady's injury is concerned. What are the strong points? What does this team do particularly well that you've noticed?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. I think the offense, the thing that I really like about it more than maybe the 2007 team, is the fact that it's much more balanced. you know, the run pass ratio is, you know, somewhat equal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like that in a football in an offense, and I think it creates a lot of difficulties and problems for defenses. And so, having the running game and the passing game both contributing to the offenses is really meaningful. And I think in the long run, it's going to pay huge, huge dividends. On defense, for a while there, you know, having in you know, this is just my opinion, which, you know, it probably worth about as much as it costs.
No, I think people would pay attention to your opinion.
But, you know, I think, you know, when they traded Vrabel, Seymour, and Bruschi left, you know, you lost a hunk of leadership off that defense. And I think bringing Junior Sal back, who I don't think, you know, I don't think they brought him back for his contribution in play as much as it was his contribution for leadership.
Yeah.
And I think the defense has begun to perform a little better, you know, with his kind of spirit and heart being on the team.
Yeah, no question. What's it like when you see a 40-year-old linebacker running around out there? I mean, did you ever once consider pushing it beyond, you know, the time that you ended up giving it up? Did you ever think that you could do something like that?
No, my knees were shot. I mean, you know, I would not have given it up then had I, you know, been able to keep going.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't want to give it up. I had to.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way it is with most guys. But, you know, I think, you know, somebody asked me that earlier today, and I said Junior Sal ought to actually be paying, you know, Seymour and Wolfert and all those guys, a piece of his salary, because, you know, what it means to me is that they kept him clean. They didn't allow offensive linemen to hit him that much.
Good point.
You know, had he been, you know, as a linebacker now, you know, it's almost like the same thing. Your defensive line are almost used like offensive linemen, only they're protecting the linebackers to let them flow. And so that way linebackers can, you know, play much longer than they used to because they're not taking that beating that they once did.
Sure.
So it's a different game for them. And, you know, there's no question I'm not in no way do I want to imply that I disrespect his longevity, because anybody that can, you know, just keep their athletic ability that long, I mean, that's huge. I mean, I can still remember, you know, going through a hole at time and saying, "Well, there it is," but my body just wouldn't go, you know.
Right, right.
But he still got it.
John, does that mean that you respect or you admire in any way what Brett Favre is doing at Minnesota?
Oh, I absolutely do. You know, I think when we'll really discover, you know, how Brett is at that age is at the end of the year.
Yeah.
You know, the last three or four games. You know, and if they make it in the playoffs, how does he do in the playoff system?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I respect him, and I think, you know, I don't know if I necessarily like or appreciate the way he's gone about it or the perception of the way he's gone about it. I mean, I don't know the rules well enough to know if there was no other alternative than for him to do what he did to get to where he is.
Right.
So, you know, whatever happened, it happened, but I respect him as an athlete, no question.
Sure. Well, John Hanna, Patriots Hall of Famer, with us here inside the playbook. The Patriots have done a rather remarkable job of finishing the season strong over the last, since 2001, really. We can go all the way back. I think they've won like 84% of their games after the 1st of November, which is a remarkable thing. How does a team do that, and what does it take, in your estimation, to be able to have a team that knows how to finish like that?
Well, I think it's there's a lot of things involved. I think one is just the mindset of the players. I think that, you know, they have to be willing to suck it up and go. I think another thing that is a contributing factor is that maybe the coaches have learned the formula to keep their legs fresh, so that as time goes by, our players are still more fresh, a little less injured than maybe our opponents.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other component of that is that it's a tribute to the coaching staff in that they are constantly learning about the players that they've got and what they do well, and they eliminate those things that they don't do well and put in the things that they do well, and, you know, are much more efficient that way.
Sure. I don't know that in this particular – I don't know but in this particular instance, but, you know, when you look at the Patriots at all, do you see anything in these teams that reminds you of the teams – when you were with New England and realizing you played in a little bit different era, obviously with a different cast of characters, but do you see similar traits, and is that necessarily a good thing?
Well, I think there are good things and there's bad things. I think the good thing is seeing the, you know, the balanced offense that I was talking about. Mm-hmm. I think, in the late 70s, mid to late 70s, we had one of the most potent offenses in the league. And we both ran and threw the ball. And what most people don't remember is the fact that we were averaging over 400 yards a game.
Yeah, sure.
In the years that we were, we had that 2-14 season.
Yeah, that's right.
But we had to quit, you know, the offense and start strictly running the ball because we didn't want our defense on the field.
Sure.
So that, I think, you know, having that kind of a balance reminds me of us, but they and they're accomplishing it. I think the difference is they're probably a little stronger maybe in the pass than we were, but we were a little stronger in the run than they are.
Yeah. I do remember those years very, very well. That's probably about the time that I really started following the Patriots as a boy growing up in football crazy Texas. Everybody said, why would you follow the Patriots if you're from Texas? And the reason is because they could move the football. They had a great offense. I loved them. Didn't have much defense, but boy, you had to know.
Well, I tell you what's hard down in Texas and Alabama. They don't even watch pro football.
No,
that much.
They don't.
They watch
you're
college
right.
Ball.
Yeah, you're right. Well, I mean, Texas people in Texas growing up. I mean, we followed the Cowboys. Nobody followed the Oilers because the Oilers were in that inferior. They were in that other league, you know.
That's right.
But you know, still, you always follow the Cowboys. And the fact is that love the Patriots. First, and I told somebody this, John, the other day. I said, you know what? The real reason that I follow the Patriots is I loved the Pat Patriot logo on the helmets.
You're kidding, man.
No, I liked it. I liked the guy wearing the colonial thing hudded down over the football. I thought that was great. I mean, what else do kids usually look at, right?
You know, when I was in college, I was wanting to go to Dallas.
Really?
That's where I wanted to wind up because, you know, I'd grown up with two teams, watched, you know, Green Bay all the time because Bart Starr was there.
Yeah.
And then I watched Dallas because Leroy was there.
Right.
So, you know, there's Leroy Jordan.
Oh, yeah.
D.D. Lewis.
Yeah.
And, you know, all
Doomsday defense.
And,
yeah.
And just great ball players.
Yeah.
I couldn't wait to maybe try to play for the Cowboys.
Well, that was the way it was, I know, with a lot of guys. And final question for you, John, and again, thanks for the time today. In along those lines, obviously everybody knows this is the 50th anniversary of the franchise, right, and the 50th anniversary of when the AFL was born. Did you ever think, in your wildest dreams, especially when you were playing, but even beyond, because obviously you have a memory bank that goes back a ways here, and I'm not calling you old by any stretch.
Oh, yeah, you are.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not. I have the utmost respect for people of our era, because I have to join you there. But did you ever think that this franchise would turn out to be, or turn out the way that it did?
When Mr. Kraft took over the team, having known him, I kind of did.
Really?
To be quite honest with you.
Well, that's good. That's good to know.
You know, I had seen what he had accomplished. You know, if a man doesn't have too big of an ego, you know, there's a difference between confidence and ego.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I knew he had the confidence. I knew he was a fan, and I knew he wanted a championship. And he's been able to accomplish a lot of things in life, and I kind of felt like maybe he could do it here too.
Sure.
And, you know, it took him a couple of learning experiences, but you know what? He got it right, and he did it.
Definitely did that. Let's hope there's a little more good football to be played this year, shall we?
I'm with you.
John, thank you.
Why don't you go to bring another see that Super Bowl trophy come here one more time?
Well, that would be nice.
Wouldn't it?
It would definitely be nice. It would be a great way to end the decade, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
John, I sure appreciate the visit. Thank you so much. It's always great to talk with you.
Nice talking to you. Thank you very much for having me on.
You got it. We'll see you soon.
See ya.
That's Patriots great John Hanna. in the playbook. In fact, Al, our buddy Al in Valdosta, Georgia, just chimed in here, and he says, John, thanks for dialing up John Hanna. So we'll thank Jason for dialing up John Hanna. To this day, even with all the wins, to me, John Hanna remains the greatest Patriot player ever and one of the top 10 pro football players of all time, regardless of position. He is widely considered to be the greatest offensive lineman to have ever played the game, which is why he is in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. William sends an email. He says, John, Dolphins 14, Patriots 48. Okay, maybe I have Patriots colored glasses on. Maybe. Don't know. I don't know if it'll be that big. I don't know if it'll be quite that big a margin, but you know, I do certainly like the Patriots, I think, overall on Sunday. Bilo is in the house with the Fantasy Lowdown coming up in just a couple of minutes.
I feel like it's been a few weeks since you and I have had this. You know, Chris Price was in last week. I think there was London was the week before that. So
I know
it's been a while. How you been?
I'm good.
Good.
What's
good.
Happening?
You know,
how was London?
London,
because I haven't talked to you since then.
London was one interesting trip.
Yeah.
It was neat. It was a neat experience. It was a whirlwind. Don't get me wrong. It was a whirlwind, but it was fun to be a part of. That stadium was phenomenal. The game atmosphere was fantastic. The game itself, you know, was a non-competitive football game, but if you're a fan of the Patriots, you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It was really neat. I had never been to London, so and I'll tell you what, and I talked about this last week on the show. Those guys, a lot of the guys who emailed the shows here on Patriots.com radio, the UK Patriots fan club, those guys were having an absolute blast. It was neat to see them because they come out here every year, and sure, they're still sure. coming out
yeah.
for the Carolina game in December. Right. It was neat to have them enjoy sort of being the hosts for a week, and you know, they had a little flag football game against the Tampa Bay, their right. Tampa Bay fan club.
And lost.
And lost. Bad.
Bad. Really?
Yeah. Yeah. But, and I count me as a witness, they had a couple of ringers. They had a couple of, like, you know, like, legit players, but it was neat. So yeah, and now we're you know, through the bye week, and but you know, there's no bye weeks in fantasy football, John. You know that.
That's very true.
Yeah,
very true.
Yeah,
and we've got a half a dozen emails or so here for you that we're saving.
Yeah,
so,
we got them. People have been emailing in. It's been great. And
well, this is when the game's really starting to mean something now.
Yeah.
You passed that halfway point, and now you're going to get to the stretch run. And there's a lot more emphasis on individual performances, and
oh yeah,
it means a lot as far as the team is concerned.
Right.
So
very, very few fantasy football players, Jason, are completely out of contention in their league. Very few. John.
What is he saying here?
I am very the Detroit few. Lions.
Very few.
You're the Detroit Lions?
I am.
He's pulled an offer so far.
Oh, my God. How bad is
John,
that?
John, it's good fodder for the radio show.
I've had no running backs all season, and then Brady has the bye last week. So I go, all right, you know, Eli's going to have a decent game. I have Eli Manning as my backup quarterback, and yeah, that worked out for me.
He's
smashingly.
I think Jason's on the fence on whether or not to just go for the offer or actually try to win games. He's on the fence.
So. I'd go for the offer.
That's kind of what I'm thinking.
Do you get a booby prize for? You should get you should get some like bowling passes or something.
I'm sure James Cuff will come up with something if I.
He can host the Fantasy Lowdown for.
Yeah, there you go. Host the Fantasy Lowdown.
Maybe I could produce the Fantasy Lowdown for 14 weeks.
That'd be nice.
Nice. All right. So Fantasy Lowdown coming up here in just a couple of minutes.
Yep.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
I'm going to end the program with our boy Mikey Vandalism, who sends us another MP3. I guess his thoughts on the game coming up this Sunday. All right, Mikey, take it away.
What's up, John? This is Mikey Vandalism from East Haven, coming to you with premium quality MP3. So my input for the game this week, which I will be attending live for the very first time ever, so if you want to give me any tips on some heads up for stuff for the game, I'd greatly appreciate it. I'm very excited. But I think this game's going to come a lot closer than a lot of people think. I mean, the Dolphins have a lot to lose for this game, and they're going to be coming in guns blazing. And I think they're going to really be trying to put some points on the board. I actually think it's going to be a very high-scoring game. My point prediction will probably be about 31-27 New England. But I think it's going to be a lot tougher than people think. And I think the Patriots definitely have something to prove after they got embarrassed at home last year by the Dolphins. So they're really going to have to do some work and get this going, because Miami plays a tough game. So hopefully New England has what they could do to counter it. And I'd like to actually see some wildcat. I'd like to see New England pull one of their own card out on the Dolphins. So we'll see how that works out. All right, John, take care. Have a good weekend.
All right, Mikey getting his I can't even begin to bring my voice to that level.
his premium picks. By the way, really, Mikey, if you're going to show up in person, you're going to be here this week, just visit Craft World. Just, you know, get out there and have fun, you know. Patriot Place, that's where it's supposed to be. It's New England's premier destination.
And participate in that cheer.
Yes, and participate with us vocally. Although I don't know if anybody will hear you with that kind of an octave level that you can, you know, attain. But it's very impressive, by the way.
Anyway. Maybe we could put him in the booth and have him do the first down call.
Think anybody would listen? People would be holding their heads wondering what the heck was that screech.
Patriots first down.
Mikey, thanks for the MP3. All right, B-Lo's coming up next with Fantasy Lowdown. Pats and the Dolphins, 1 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday. We'll run it all down next Tuesday. Same Pats time, same Pats channel in the playbook.